WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. There's a change of plans for President Donald Trump's Oklahoma rally.
In a tweet sent late Friday, President Trump said, out of respect for the Juneteenth holiday, he would move his Oklahoma campaign rally from June 19th to June 20th. Trump added he made the decision after many of his African American friends and supporters reached out to suggest he consider changing the date. The president went on to say his campaign has received hundreds of thousands of ticket requests to attend the rally. Carrie Shoemaker, Washington.
Attendees will need to sign a waiver saying they won't sue if they get the coronavirus. President Trump says he's considering using the military to stop protesters in Seattle, like this man who've taken over a police precinct around an area they have dubbed the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone.
I'm not scared of Donald Trump, no, and I'm not scared of his police officers either. We're going to stay outside this building whether they come here or not.
Seattle police say they want to move back into that precinct that they abandoned during the protests. The streets of D.C. have been packed with people protesting what they believe is the targeting of black people by police. This morning, the We Back Blue group hopes to pack the streets with people who support police. Organizer Melissa Roby.
This march is a collective effort to show law enforcement that we care about them, we're supportive of them, and that we have the courage to show that.
The march starts at 11 at the Capitol. Protesters in Alexandria today rallying for a different cause. They're protesting a proposed ban on guns on city-owned properties and parks.
The proposed Alexandria ordinance is an outgrowth of the Virginia Beach shootings that left 12 people dead in a municipal building where no guns were allowed. That's part of the problem, according to gun rights advocate Philip Van Cleve.
Does the name Steve Scalise ring a bell to anybody? He was in one of their parks. So now they want everybody up. So if you're in one of their parks and some maniac comes up and decides he wants to start killing people, too bad. You're going to be on your own.
Van Cleve, president of the Virginia Citizens Defense League, tells WMAL's Mornings on the Mall the ban unfairly targets legal gun owners and not criminals. Barbara Britt, WMAL and WMAL.com.
In sports, the back and forth between Major League Baseball and the Players Union continues.
In response to the union's proposal of an 89-game season at full prorated pay, the league has countered with a 72-game season at 80% of prorated salaries, 70% of which would be guaranteed. The other 10% would come if the postseason is completed. The season would start on July 14th and end in late September. The league wants players to accept an additional pay cut on top of their prorated salaries because owners say they stand to lose up to 60% of their revenue with no fans in the stands. The union believes any proposal without 100% of their prorated pay is a form of salary cap. Commissioner Rob Manfred has the right to mandate a shorter season if players stick to their 100% demands. I'm John Stolness.
Traffic and weather next.
It's everything you need to know Sundays on WMAL. Starting at 5 a.m., it's VA Sunday Magazine. At 5:30, hear the Chris McKay Show. At 7, it's Heroes Talk Radio with Dave Ahrens. At 8, it's the Eric Stewart Show pointing you home. Hear The Wise Investor at 9, Dr. Tom Rosell Live at 11, Purity Products at 2, Mortgage Radio at 3, Real Estate Today at 7, and at 9 p.m., it's Lawyer in Your Corner with Ryan Wilson on 105.9 FM WMAL.
Trading involves financial risk and is not suitable for all investors.
Stock market have you nervous with all the massive fluctuations? With the impact of coronavirus and the upcoming election, it's virtually impossible to guess what will happen next. With Vantage Point, you don't have to. Text the word money to 411-411 to find out how our technology can forecast market trend changes with up to 87.4% accuracy. That's right, 87.4%. Text the word money to 411-411 to get what you need to stay ahead of market trends and better protect yourself from sudden downturns. Vantage Point's patented technology analyzes huge quantities of global data in seconds. No more guessing when to stay or when to get out. Text MONEY to 411-411, and we'll send you a link to our free demo. Text MONEY to 411-411 so you can better protect your hard-earned capital with Vantage Point. Don't wait. Text the word MONEY to 411-411.
Go to VantagePointSoftware.com for terms, conditions, and privacy policy.
In Virginia, the earlier accident on the outer loop of the Beltway between Braddock Road and the Springfield Interchange cleared, and it looks like all lanes are open and delays have eased. On the inner loop, though, at US 50 in Lanham, there is still the fire department activity due to the vehicle fire. Still has that right lane and the off-ramp blocked, so keep that in mind. And on 95 northbound in Maryland in Jessup at 175, that right lane is still blocked with a long-standing accident there. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny on this Saturday. High pressure in control today. Highs around 80 degrees with low humidity. Tonight, increasing clouds. Weak disturbance will move into the mid-Atlantic. Best chance for showers will be in the mountains, particularly on Sunday afternoon and evening. Otherwise, Sunday for D.C., partly sunny to mostly cloudy. Highs in the mid-70s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
Hey everyone, Laura from Garden Answer here. Growing garden roses is really easy if you start with Oh So Easy Roses. Oh So Easy Roses from Proven Winners are super healthy and they come in a wide range of colors. Look for Proven Winners roses at your garden center in the white containers.
Businesses are starting to bounce back. But what if you could do better than that? What if you could adapt, deliver, and succeed in new ways with new customers? At Comcast Business, we want to help you not just bounce back, but bounce forward. And now, with one of our best offers ever, we're committed to helping you do just that. Get a powerful and reliable internet and voice solution for only $29.95 a month for 3 months with a 2-year agreement. It'll help you stay ahead with a network you can count on, stay connected with 24/7 support, and thrive with flexible solutions that work wherever you are. Call 1-800-501-6000 or go online today to find out more. Comcast Business. Offer ends 7/5/2020. Restrictions apply. Limited to new Comcast Business 100 megabits internet and one voice mobility line customers. Early termination fee applies. Equipment, installation taxes, and fees extra. Subject to change.
Now, the Saturday morning update.
Thank you for joining us on the Saturday morning update. It's hour two. I'm Rick Bollard. John Gizzi joins us, and he is the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Rick.
I know you have spent a lot of time, including time in the streets, covering the protests and the defund the police movement.
Defund the police means just what it says at face value. That is to deny the money to major police force, put it back into the community, and perhaps try to build up some new means of law enforcement. When asked on CNN whether she meant to defund the police, City Council President Lisa Bender of Minneapolis, Minnesota, said that's precisely what she meant. In other cities, it means to implement reforms, greater community relations. Camden, New Jersey, for example, basically closed down its old police department, which had been controversial for its dealings with the criminal element, and put in a new, more community-oriented police department that's been widely praised in the law enforcement community. But over the weekend, I found that more and more people were saying precisely that, defund the police. They were condemning the police. They were calling for the arrest and trial of the three other officers, along with Derek Chauvin, who were caught up in the arrest that eventually resulted in the death of George Floyd. Now, that said, as this phrase caught on, some people began to do some deep thinking about defunding the police and wondering just what that would mean. As Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana said, if you hate the police that much, the next time you're being mugged, just call a crackhead. Other people I spoke to who were in the marches in Washington began to give some thoughtful answers. Jeffrey Jackson from Arlington, Virginia, said the day after the major march in Washington, no, he did not like the term defund the police, because that played into the hands of the right and to President Trump, who would use it as red meat for his supporters. Iris Vaughn, a black lady from New Jersey who came all the way here to march in memorial to George Floyd, said, "I don't want to defund the police. I do believe there are racist cops, and one has to get rid of them." But she basically dismissed those three words. So while they carried signs and painted posters, the thoughtful among the protesters know that politically this is a hot potato. They don't really want to defund the police, their placards and protest sayings notwithstanding.
The controversy over Confederate statues and, for that matter, the renaming of military installations. And you always bring us such a wonderful historic perspective on things. So let's start with Speaker Nancy Pelosi. She wants to remove the statues of Confederate leaders that are in the Capitol. There is a bit of a family history with Speaker Pelosi that's somewhat ironic here.
3 years ago, I wrote about it, and the story is poignant today. As you say, Rick, Speaker Pelosi wants the 11 statues of Confederate war heroes removed from the U.S. Capitol. She originally said that she did not care about them, but she noted that many people were offended by the presence of General Robert E. Lee and others. What's so ironic about it is that when Speaker Pelosi first got on this issue while minority leader in the House in 2017, I did a little research and found out that the statues of Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson in Baltimore, Maryland, were dedicated in 1948 by the then mayor of Baltimore, Thomas J. D'Alessandro, Jr., father of Nancy Pelosi. I might add that he gave one of the most eloquent speeches as to why Maryland, which was on the side of the Union in the Civil War, would honor Confederates. He pointed out that when the North and the South were united and came together, years later, they joined forces and the best military minds helped defeat the enemies of America in Europe and the Pacific. He also pointed out that these were Americans who distinguished themselves in combat and in military theory. And with the U.S. facing communists in the Cold War, Mayor D'Alessandro said, perhaps we should have the same strength of a Stonewall, referring to Jackson, in facing the communist enemy. Now, I might add that this was a long time ago, but the words were not in any way racist at all. They were about the courage that was so typically American. Nancy Pelosi might be wise to simply check the words of her own father.
John, it's not only Confederate heroes. There's a lot of collateral damage, and you can say that in the literal sense.
Oh, you certainly can. And I think that one is finding that statues that offended anyone are now fair game for protesters and frightened politicians. A case in point is that of Christopher Columbus. Columbus, the Italian explorer who discovered America and thought he was somewhere else, has always been a target from the Native American community. He is somebody who, they said, brought slavery and mistreatment of Native Americans when he arrived here from Europe. He's also the person who brought the culture that would make America what it was in a very short order here. Nonetheless, the person that we are taught discovered America with the backing of the Spanish monarchy now becomes a target and subject to charges of racism and bigotry. His punishment is that statues of Columbus are being torn down. In Richmond, Virginia, of all places, someone who was not even involved in the Civil War had his statue thrown into the water after it was torn down. It'll be interesting to see what the National Italian American Foundation and other groups have to say when perhaps the greatest representative of their people is so belittled, so mocked, and so desecrated. And I can say that. I'm Italian.
And I think one might be surprised to hear that Winston Churchill has also been in the crosshairs.
From the ridiculous to the sublime, statues of Britain's wartime prime minister, the person who gave Britain its roar to stand up and finally defeat the Nazi invaders, was being desecrated with the words racist. Now, of course, it is true that Churchill was a defender of Britain's colonial possessions, as were a lot of members of his conservative party. It's also true that he had little regard for some of the leaders of independence movements around the world and said some things that we would consider unfortunate. Mahatma Gandhi, the father of Indian independence, was in Churchill's eyes a naked faker. Now, this is also someone who, despite his position at the time, one shared by many, was nonetheless voted by the historians in Britain as one of the 10 greatest figures of the 20th century, and inevitably on every poll of Britons of consequence in the 20th century, he ranks first. And one is finally getting a statement of condemnation from his biographer about the desecration of his statues, his biographer being the current Prime Minister, Boris Johnson. It's about time, says this reporter.
Tell us about the move of the Republican Convention from Charlotte, North Carolina, now to Jacksonville, Florida.
Well, this is probably the worst-kept secret in Washington. 10 days ago, the president tweeted that the Republican National Convention would not be in Charlotte, North Carolina, as was long planned. This will cost the city an estimated $160 million in terms of unused hotel rooms and possible revenue that would come from the conventioners who would be there for a week. That said, the move to Jacksonville was very little of a surprise. The president's good friend and supporter, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, wanted the convention in Florida, and reportedly the president himself had a hand in selecting the Sunshine State over Tennessee and Texas, who also wanted it. Now, the issue here is that the Democratic governor of North Carolina, Roy Cooper, would not give assurances that the social distancing rules would be lifted in time for the convention 3 months from now. The president was not going to gamble on having to come to a convention where delegates and reporters would have to sit 6 feet apart. Hence, he opted for Jacksonville, which has no social distancing requirements anymore. My guess is that it will be interesting to see where the electoral votes of North Carolina fall. Remember, some will be upset at the president for pulling out of the Tar Heel State. Others will be mad at Governor Cooper for, in their view, forcing him to make this decision.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. You can keep up with him on Twitter at John Gizzi. John, thank you.
Always a pleasure. And remember something. As we look at history, as we look at the statues, let's think of the words of Winston Churchill himself. History will prove me right, he said, for I will live to write the history.
7:19, Saturday morning update. Jim Trusty's next. First, Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Virginia, the earlier accident on the outer loop of the Beltway between Braddock Road and the Springfield Interchange cleared, and it looks like all lanes are open and delays have eased. On the inner loop, though, at US 50 in Lanham, there is still the fire department activity due to the vehicle fire. Still has that right lane and the off-ramp blocked, so keep that in mind. And on 95 northbound in Maryland in Jessup at 175, that right lane is still blocked with a long-standing accident there. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny on this Saturday. High pressure in control today. Highs around 80 degrees with low humidity. Tonight, increasing clouds. A weak disturbance will move into the mid-Atlantic. Best chance for showers will be in the mountains, particularly on Sunday afternoon and evening. Otherwise, Sunday for D.C., partly sunny to mostly cloudy. Highs in the mid-70s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
63 degrees, the nation's capital, at 7:20 on the Saturday morning update.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler, and it's always great to be joined by Jim Trustee. He is with IFRA Law here in Washington, and he is the former chief of the Organized Crime and Gang Section at the United States Department of Justice. Jim, good to have you with us again this morning.
Sure. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
The Senate Judiciary Committee authorizing subpoenas for former Obama administration officials when it comes to the investigation into the Russia probe, origins, etc. And when you look at some of the names, James Comey, James Clapper, Andrew McCabe, John Brennan, Susan Rice, Senate testimony, how could it unfold if these officials do end up in testimony?
Well, good question. There's a lot of interesting components to this, and I guess let me just start off by saying I'm a huge fan of doing a full autopsy on everything to do with the Russia probe, the Hillary probe, the Trump probe, whatever we want to call that constellation of public corruption investigations. I think it's undeniably clear that there's some high-level FBI people that have a lot to answer for. So Comey, McCabe, Strzok, and Page, I mean, there's enough from the Inspector General report, enough from their own public comments to recognize that this is something that was off the rails and it deserves full scrutiny. What's interesting is to me is a couple of things. One is that it's getting into the intelligence community and a little bit into the political world. You know, we've all talked about the FBI and DOJ and what they did at various junctures, but there hasn't been as much talk about John Brennan, James Clapper, you know, whether they had some sort of role in handling Christopher Steele, the dossier, if they were puppeteers behind the scenes or not. So that's a real interesting component to get into the intelligence community. The other thing that I think is fascinating and kind of sad is the concept of the Fifth Amendment here. There may well be high-level people like Jim Comey or Andrew McCabe that come into Congress and have to take the Fifth Amendment, which is really kind of a shocking concept. Not that they don't have the same constitutional rights as everyone else, but the people that high in law enforcement find themselves reduced to taking the Fifth because they're worried about John Durham. So I think that's going to be very interesting to see if they come in and take five.
That's an interesting scenario where you mentioned taking the Fifth because of what could ultimately bite them in the future in the Durham investigation. Contrast for us a congressional hearing and sort of the expectations of the outcomes versus something like the Durham investigation.
Well, almost night and day. When you talk about congressional hearings, unfortunately, there's a lot of posturing. There tends to be about 4 minutes and 50 seconds of speeches and sound bites and 10 seconds of random questions. So, you know, it's very difficult just in terms of the institution, how they conduct their examinations. It's just not as deep a dive or not as sufficient as something you might see in a courtroom setting. So I do think they need to do a full autopsy. I don't know that congressional hearings are going to do the job that maybe serious career law enforcement people could do behind closed doors and really uncovering what happened during these probes, but it's worth a shot. And then the contrast, really, I mean, look, the Durham investigation, John Durham is a guy who has a superb reputation as a career prosecutor for being very apolitical. And so I think what he'll do, like prosecutors are supposed to, is he'll let the indictments do the talking. This is somebody that if he pulls together the evidence and gets indictments, then I think there'll be serious indictments. They'll be well thought out. They will not be these rinky-dink false statement cases. They're going to be the real deal if he indicts people. But another kind of interesting point there is, you keep hearing people say, well, I can't wait to see the Durham report. Well, I don't think there's going to be a Durham report. It's not the same as Mueller. I don't believe that he's ever been designated as special counsel like Robert Mueller. So it's basically either indictments or silence, which is how prosecutors are actually supposed to do their job.
So you mentioned there could be indictments or silence. If it turns out that there's a minor indictment, or perhaps the grand jury returns no indictments, what would you recommend as maybe an alternative, or would there be another vehicle to really look into it? Because we know these Senate hearings, it's on TV for one day, and then it's out of the news cycle 24 hours later, and there's never any follow-up.
Right. Well, look, this is going to sound like a spectacularly inside the beltway political answer. But I really think this is a circumstance we're setting up some sort of commission, a blue ribbon commission with serious law enforcement experts from various administrations coming together. You know, I think that has a better chance of really getting to the bottom line of what was happening on the high levels of the FBI, the double standards that we know they were engaged in, the conduct they had towards Michael Flynn, which has led to this motion to dismiss, you know, the mysteries that were left kind of unsolved by the Inspector General investigation because they don't draw inferences, because they just kind of pull up short and say, we don't see things, but they don't actually analyze why they're missing certain things. I just think there's a lot that a serious group could do if they wanted to give a full accounting for what happened during these incredibly important public corruption probes. I don't know that that's going to happen. I don't know that there's the political willpower to make it happen. But in a perfect world, I think that would be the best bet of really knowing all the good and bad that happened during these investigations.
I want to turn to the latest in the General Flynn saga. On Friday, a three-judge appeals court panel heard all arguments in the dispute between Judge Emmett Sullivan and the DOJ over the dismissal of the charges against General Michael Flynn. What is the latest, Jim?
Well, it gets curiouser and curiouser. And look, if you listened like I did to the two-hour hearing yesterday, hoping to hear whether General Flynn is a saint or a villain, you're going to be sorely disappointed. This was all about process. It was very nuanced. It was very much in the weeds of various legal issues. But basically, it circles around two things. The first is, what's the role of a judge in a motion to dismiss? That's really what got us on this mandamus to the Court of Appeals, which is whether the judge was overstepping his bounds on something that's pretty routine. But the second part of it, which ties into whether you're going to get a ruling, is whether or not mandamus, a mandate from a higher court, is appropriate right now. So remember, you know, Flynn's lawyers went to the Court of Appeals before we've gotten to the finish line to say basically Judge Sullivan is doing something wrong or he's gearing up to do something wrong. So a lot of the fight today was over whether it's premature for an appellate court to step in now. And once you started hearing questions from the bench about that issue, about ripeness, as they call it, you could tell that basically the judge's lawyer, Beth Wilkinson, was ready to jump all over that. And she pointed out there's a hearing on July 16th and that the judge might just decide to take all this advice and throw it out the window and dismiss the case quietly. I don't think that's a real safe bet. But in any event, she, you know, jumped on this issue of ripeness and was pretty persuasive with the bench on that. Meanwhile, the other side, which was kind of strangely united, right? Flynn's attorneys and the government lawyers are both saying the judge has already surpassed his authority, that he's already talking about maybe taking testimony or affidavits from prosecutors to explain themselves. So they basically say to the court, don't wait until July 16th. He's already gone down the rails the wrong way. In fact, I think the closing comment from government counsel was the train may not have hit the destination yet, but it never should have left the station. And so that was kind of the collective position of the government and General Flynn's attorneys. But what's kind of ironic here is at the end of the day, the parties are asking an appellate court to be activist because they think Judge Sullivan's being activist. So it's going to be really interesting to see whether this court goes along with it and rules now, or if they take kind of the easy way out, but one that judges do all the time, which is to push back and say, well, he hasn't really done anything yet. He hasn't denied the motion to dismiss. We're going to wait until at least July 16th. And if we have to come back shortly after July 16th, we will. So hard to figure out where the bench is going to end up on it. Very procedural kind of hearing. I don't think they're going to turn around and say it's okay to take depositions from prosecutors or go as far as Judge Sullivan's counsel seems to want him to go. But they could send a little bit of a message that they're watching and they really don't want to have to deal with the judge usurping the authority of the executive branch. So I'm curious if they deny the motion but send a little bit of a signal that it needs to end on July 16th.
When you look at all the crime in this country and the process and how long it takes to prosecute violent crimes and crimes with victims, strikes me as a lot of energy be expended here over a lying to the FBI, which is sort of a gray one anyway in his case.
Well, it's certainly gray in General Flynn's case, and that's in large part because of FBI misconduct and even discovery violations after this case started to unravel. So there's an awful lot that makes his case an unusual case. But you're right. At the heart of it, we're talking about a 1001, 18 U.S.C. section 1001, false statement to the FBI. It was a case that was supposed to have been closed. It was an interview that broke pretty much every rule you could think of that would be in place to do it right, and then was accompanied with discovery violations by the prosecution team. So everything about it smells like a colossal waste and a victimizing waste. I mean, you don't have to believe General Flynn is a saint to recognize that he was mistreated by the system, and it continues to this day, and it really does need to end. So it's interesting to me that Judge Sullivan has so much apparent fire in his belly towards General Flynn. And I understand the concept of, you know, he pled guilty and then he tried to withdraw, and now he's back to saying he's innocent, but that's ignoring the government conduct, the FBI conduct. And, you know, Judge Sullivan was the one that presided over the Ted Stevens autopsy case, you know, going back and looking at discovery violations there, and he had tremendous wrath for the way the government didn't play fair. So it's kind of intriguing to me that he's not taking the same tack here, when the Attorney General's motion to dismiss really did lay out a lot of the misconduct on behalf of the FBI. So here we are years later, years after the ambush interview, still litigating and still spending time and money on something that's a, again, run-of-the-mill, rinky-dink false statement case.
Jim Trusty at IFRA Law here in Washington, thank you very much for the perspectives this morning, Jim.
Sure. Great talking to you, Rick.
7:30 News is next. Then Rebecca, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and K.E.T. McFarland.
Don't miss the Trading Group Show, Saturdays at 3 p.m. on WMAL. Learn how you can earn a full-time income as a short-term trader. That's the Trading Group Show, Saturdays at 3 p.m. The question line is 888-646-8787.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM WMAL, a Cumulus station. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. President Donald Trump tweets he's looking forward to seeing supporters at his rally next week in Oklahoma. It won't be held June 19th as planned after he says African-American supporters and friends asked him to change the controversial date since it was on Juneteenth, the holiday celebrating the end of slavery in the U.S. It will be June 18th instead. Lots of anger is being directed at police officers following the killing of George Floyd. Today, the We Back Blue group will be showing officers some love during a protest at the Capitol. Organizer Melissa Roby.
I have friends that collectively have said they're working six-hour days, sometimes 20-hour days between COVID and the riots. They're tired, they're worn out, and they are not getting supported at all, and they're just feeling awful.
The rally starts at 11.
2:10. Ignition.
SpaceX launched a Falcon 9 rocket today with its ninth batch of Starlink communication satellites, bringing the aerospace company one step closer to reaching its goal of providing global internet coverage from space. In sports, Major League Baseball and its players are moving closer to a deal. MLB offered players 80% of their prorated salaries and a 72-game schedule. This is in response to the union's proposed 82-game season at full pay. The MLB commissioner can shorten the season if players stick to their demands for 100% pay. WMAL Traffic and Weather next.
Hi, this is Simon Hamilton, co-host of the Wise Investor Show on WMAL. The CARES Act was recently established to support individuals and business owners during these challenging times. From small business loans to tax considerations, there are a variety of ways it can help. We're here to help you navigate these changes and help you understand what the CARES Act could mean for your financial plan. Visit thewiseinvestorgroup.com to speak with one of our advisors today.
Call 866-758-9473 or log on to thewiseinvestorgroup.com and resolve to become a better informed, wise investor.
Don't miss the Giant Barbecue Battle virtual experience benefiting USO Metro and the Capital Area Food Bank.
From June 1st through 30th,
America's virtual food and music festival heats up summer with interactive activities including cooking contests, monumental sports zone, giant corks to cap, special giveaways, and more.
Learn to cook like a pro from America's best chefs.
Then enter barbecue contests for a chance to win thousands of prizes.
Watch your favorite bands on the Pepsi Lays, Famous Dave's, and Monster Energy stages. Admission is free. Visit bbqdc.com for details.
Hey everyone, Laura from Garden Answer. If you want your yard to really shine, just look for the shrubs in the white Proven Winners containers at your garden center. They've been thoroughly tested and handpicked in order to give you a carefree, colorful yard with a whole lot less effort on your part. I trust Proven Winners shrubs, and you can too. They've got lilacs, hydrangeas, roses, and all your favorites. And they come in a wide range of color and sizes, making them really great for all gardens. Make life colorful and easy with Proven Winners flowering shrubs.
WMAL traffic from the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Laurel, watch out for accident activity at the intersection of 198 and 197. Watch for police direction around this accident scene. Northbound on the Baltimore-Washington Parkway before 410, there is roadwork in the left lane, and that is causing some slow traffic from 450. On the inner loop of the Beltway at US 50 in Maryland, looks like the overnight truck fire and that fire department activity cleared, and the ramps have been reopened. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Plenty of sunshine to start the weekend. Expect mostly sunny skies today. Highs around 80 degrees, low humidity. Could see some afternoon clouds. That's as a weak disturbance moves south into the region. Increasing clouds tonight, lows 55 to 63. Fierce Sunday, partly sunny to mostly cloudy. Bit of a northeast flow. Highs in the mid-70s. Best chance for any showers be in the Appalachians, a little bit farther to the west. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
Hi, this is Eric Stewart. If you've been playing with the idea of selling your home or maybe downsizing, well, tune in to my show Sunday mornings right here at 8 a.m. There I'll bring you this week's local real estate news and what you need to do to get top dollar for your property. With over 30 years of experience and the backing of Long & Foster, one of the top real estate companies, I've pretty much seen and sold it all. To learn more, check us out on the web at ericstewartgroup.com.
Right now, Blue Cross and Blue Shield companies are supporting the heroic efforts of our healthcare partners on the front line of this unprecedented fight, helping doctors and hospitals get the resources they need, ensuring patients don't have to worry about costs, and making access to prescription drugs easier. Caring when it counts the most. For the health of America. The Blue Cross Blue Shield Association is an association of independent, locally operated Blue Cross and Blue Shield companies, waiving copays exclusive to less salute.
It's the Saturday morning update, 7:38. I'm Rick Voller. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us. He is the author of Operation Dark Heart and the president of the London Center for Policy Research. Tony, good morning.
Hey, Rick. Thanks for having me. Always great to be on.
America's top general, General Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, apologized for taking part in President Trump's walk across Lafayette Square and the photo there in Lafayette Park. Milley says his presence there was wrong. Surprising that he came out and made that statement, and I know you have some thoughts on it.
Well, two things on that. First, I personally served in every administration in some form since the Carter administration in the late 1970s. And over that time, in two administrations, the Carter administration and the Bush 43 administration, there were things I had to do regarding operations which I thought were completely insane and stupid. But I, as a serving officer, either in the military or a civil servant, I couldn't just decide I'm going to make a public statement and say, oh, I don't like this. And disappointingly, that's exactly what I think Mark Milley did here. He, no matter how he feels about the president, no matter how he feels about the policy, he works for the president. He is the senior military advisor to President Trump. And I think it was wrong and inappropriate for him to make any comment regarding his presence there, because the president decided, as his boss, that he wanted him to be there. And so I find it very disappointing, as do others, that Milley now is acting in what I would term a political way. If he wanted to put this in his memoirs at some point down the road, saying, well, I didn't appreciate that, I didn't think it was appropriate, fine. But a serving line officer to come out and say something like, well, I don't like the fact my boss did X in a public way, in this case trying to undermine what I feel to undermine the president on an issue that he had every right to do, is not appropriate.
I wanted to ask you a question about the National Guard, Tony. You know, we typically see the National Guard in roles of coming out when there is a natural disaster, hurricane relief, right, things like that. The National Guard comes in. You know, recently they're there to basically restore order in a number of American cities. The National Guard has been dinged, I think, in this by many of the media outlets and the pundits and many of the protesters, you know, those people who are critical of the police, lump the National Guard in there in many of their criticisms. And I was just curious, how does that make a Guard member feel? Does that have a way of demoralizing National Guard members the way the police are being demoralized these days with the narrative out there?
I think that's the purpose of lumping the National Guard in. I mean, two things about the National Guard. First, they are citizens who live within the community in which they serve. That's one of the notable things about the Guard, Rick, is that they are there for the state. They go and do these things to support the state, everything from relief and national disasters to helping support the police to restore order. And secondly, this is, I think, somewhat reported to the extent there's now been targeting of law enforcement via social media to include law enforcement family members by Antifa elements. There's a very good possibility we see this kind of moving over now to the Guard as well. And I think it's meant to intimidate and demoralize for purposes of wanting people to not do their job. It's very dangerous and very sad that we now see the targeting of individuals such as police and now going to the Guard to dissuade them from doing what they're trying to do to protect the lives of Americans and their property.
And also, while we're on that, wanted to talk a little more about the funding of some of these organizations that are involved in the violence in the protests. And, you know, you want to separate protesters from those who are in there to instigate and those organizations that are in there to cause trouble. What more do we know about funding and who some of these organizations are?
So there's a good amount of information in Department of Homeland Security that they've been able to develop via monitoring these groups. And remember, Rick, these people have not, this is not the first time, this is not the first time to the rodeo for Antifa. They've been doing this for a while. And I think what they're trying to do now, that is law enforcement and Homeland Security, is determine how they're organized in such a way to be funded rapidly like they are. There's a lot of money out there, and obviously the old adage, follow the money. I think that's where it's going now. But along this point, I think there's been an underreporting to the public on what's been going on. I know some jurisdictions have been able to thwart things. They've not talked about it. In other cases, I think it's been very clear that Antifa has been leading the violence. Notably, I think this is obvious to most folks, the most vicious attacks of Antifa and the outbreaks of riots versus people protest have been in a lot of liberal cities, liberally run cities, Portland, Minneapolis, the list goes on of some of these places. So I would almost think that maybe people within those systems are looking the other way when some of this happens for that to happen. How do pallets of bricks show up on the street unnoticed? Just saying, there's some things there that people ought to be seriously asking some questions about how these things happen in certain cities.
And quickly want to turn to the Senate authorizing subpoenas of a number of Obama officials. I know you have been following this very closely. And what were your thoughts when you heard that from Lindsey Graham?
Well, two things. First, long overdue. For those who have not seen Rod Rosenstein's testimony in front of Lindsey Graham, you need to see it. Two people in particular have documented it very well, Bloomberg's Ellie Lake and CBS's Catherine Herridge. I recommend you go out and look at their reporting. And notably, on that list of 50, two people that we've heard a lot about lately is Joe Biden and Susan Rice, both of whom have been identified as taking and having significant roles in the unmasking of a number of folks, to include the targeting of Mike Flynn. So this is no small issue, and this was completely overlooked by the media over the past few days. But, Rick, if I were a betting person, I'm betting that some of the information that's been found will lead back to Joe Biden directly on some of what he personally was doing. I've actually spoken with someone who was in the room for a number of those meetings regarding the Flynn issue and Biden. This person was in the meetings, and this person told me that Biden was actually playing a significant role in directing activities relating to the Flynn issue. So we'll see what happens.
Wow. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, as always, great to have you with us. Thank you, Tony.
Yeah, thank you, Rick.
7:46, Saturday morning update. We'll talk to KT McFarland next. Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
On 95 northbound before Lorton Road in the Fairfax County Parkway, there is an accident reported to be in the right center lane. Use caution there. Also watch out for the accident activity in Laurel on 198 at the intersection at 197. Earlier vehicle fire on the inner loop at US 50 cleared and all ramps have been reopened. You will find slow going traffic through the work zone on the BW Parkway northbound before 410 in the left lane. Watch out for delays approaching the work zone. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny on this Saturday, high pressure in control today, highs around 80 degrees with low humidity. Tonight, increasing clouds, weak disturbance will move into the mid-Atlantic. Best chance for showers will be in the mountains, particularly on Sunday afternoon and evening. Otherwise, Sunday for D.C., partly sunny to mostly cloudy, highs in the mid-70s. I'm ABC7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
64 degrees, 7:47 on the Saturday morning update.
When it comes to using data, everyone is different. Which is why Xfinity Mobile created a different kind of wireless network. One that's designed to save you money by letting you design your own data, giving you more choice and control compared to other top wireless carriers. Now, you can choose unlimited, shared data, or mixed lines of each and switch any line, anytime. No one else lets you do that, or automatically connects you to millions of secure Wi-Fi hotspots and the best LTE everywhere else. So no matter where you are, we've got you covered. All while saving up to $400 a year on your wireless bill. Xfinity Mobile. It's wireless reimagined. Call, visit a store, or go to XfinityMobile.com today. Simple. Easy. Awesome. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Requires residential postpay Xfinity Internet. Actual savings vary and are not guaranteed. For Xfinity Mobile broadband disclosures, visit www.xfinity.com/mobile.
Achoo! Come on, are you kidding? This pollen is terrible. And yes, allergy season is here. Once it's tracked into your rugs and carpets, it's a nightmare to get out. So now, more than ever, you want a clean, healthy rug, free from pet stains, pollen, bacteria, and yes, viruses. Hadid's developed a sanitized, disinfect, and antivirus treatment that works. Right now, you can get it done for 50% off. That's right, sanitized, disinfect, and antivirus treatment for your rugs and carpets at 50% off. Look, we know these are tough times for everyone, but it's important to have a clean, healthy home. That's why Hadid has extended the 3-for-2 special. Clean two rugs and get the third rug clean for free. Plus free curbside pickup and delivery. Always taking precautions to keep you and your family safe. These are tough times, but Hadid is doing its part. So learn more about all the specials going on right now. Go to JoeHadid.com. That's JoeHadid.com. Remember, a clean home is a healthy home.
If you stand on it, we stand behind it.
Whether you're buying a home or trying to lower your interest rate, finding the right mortgage company is often stressful and time-consuming. Listen this Saturday to the Mortgage Radio Show at 1 p.m. and now on Sunday at 3 p.m. The Mortgage Radio Show is your trusted source for mortgage news. Every weekend, host Teresa Strasser and Sean Metter will give you helpful tools for finding the right mortgage product to fit your needs. So tune in to WMAL every Saturday at 1 p.m. or Sunday at 3 p.m. for the latest rates and information from Network Capital Funding here on WMAL.
Have you met a true hero lately? Hi, it's Jonathan Cotton with the Good Feet Store, and I've been thinking about heroes that I work with. Take Reese, for example, one of our store managers. Reese served in Afghanistan and sustained significant injuries when his MRAP vehicle was disabled by an IED. He was told he would never walk without a cane. However, after he was fitted with Goodfeet arch supports, he was able to walk without a limp and without a cane. His service as a manager is exemplary, and we are proud to have Reese on the Goodfeet team. The story doesn't stop there, though. Reese fell in love and got married to a beautiful nurse named Erica. And during this pandemic, who was on the front lines taking care of COVID-19 patients? You guessed it, Erica. Heroes tend to stick together. The Goodfeet store says thank you to all of our heroes. We especially say thank you to the heroes among us, such as Reese and Erica, for the many ways they have served us all. Come by the Goodfeet store and see what Goodfeet Arch Supports can do for you. You never know, you might bump into a hero.
Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. KT McFarland joins us, former Deputy National Security Advisor in the Trump administration and the author of Revolution Trump, Washington and We the People. KT, good morning.
Good morning.
And you worked so closely with General Michael Flynn, and you made some headlines across a number of different media platforms this week, that headline being your statement that if justice is served, General Flynn will be a free man. Now, yesterday, a three-judge appeals court panel heard oral arguments in the dispute between Judge Sullivan and the Department of Justice over the Justice Department's efforts to have that case dismissed. Wow. What strikes you about Judge Sullivan's stance on this?
Well, I went back, you know, I remember being struck at the time in December 2018 when General Flynn was before Judge Sullivan for his sentencing, and then he didn't get sentenced. They put it off, and here we are today. And I went through the, I remember thinking at the time, gosh, the judge is asking him a number of times, do you want to change your testimony? Do you want different lawyers? Are you happy with your lawyers? If you're not happy with your lawyers, or even if you are, I can provide a court-ordered a lawyer for you to discuss. You can even step into the other room and talk to him. Now, if you don't change your plea, you must understand that you are forever giving up your rights to change your mind on this. I mean, he asked him about 10 different times in 10 different ways, and General Flynn, on the advice of his lawyers, a then lawyer, I'm sure, said, no, 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 no. And so I went back and looked at that transcript again this week to see what hints are there for what would not possibly explain Sullivan's behavior. I think it's a couple of things. One, I think he felt he was lied to by Flynn 2 years ago. Now, there may have been justification for it. Flynn may have had really good reasons, like Flynn was sacrificing himself to save his son. But in any event, Flynn did not, you know, he lied to the judge. He lied about lying. You know, he lied about committing a crime he didn't commit. Anyway, number two, Sullivan asked the most anti-Trump judge, Gleason, to write the amicus brief. I mean, it could have been written by Adam Schiff. It was so virulent. So why would Sullivan have done that? He knew what he was doing. And then during the hearing yesterday, which I listened to completely and listened to it twice, Sullivan's lawyer kept insisting that Sullivan wasn't necessarily going to disagree with the Department of Justice and dismiss the case. He just wanted to have his chance to have his say. He wanted to weigh in on it. So what that signaled to me was that the judge, and what the lawyer said is, look, the judge isn't going to necessarily disagree with the Department of Justice. He just wants his say. So what does that tell me? Well, I think Judge Sullivan wanted to be able to say to the other side that he gave both versions a fair hearing. He wanted to get his pride back because, after all, Flynn, he gave Flynn a lot of chances to change his plea, but he didn't. And then, you know, think about it. Sullivan has to live in a city which is rabidly anti-Trump, especially for a black man. So at least he can claim by doing it this way, he wasn't pushed around by the attorney general. He wasn't pushed around by Trump. He gave everybody a fair hearing. But I think he was signaling that he plans to throw the case out, just like the Justice Department recommended.
Very interesting background and perspective on that. Thank you.
I'm the only person who thinks this, Rick, so who knows?
Well, from past experience, I'd say you're probably right on things. Wanted to talk about President Trump's decision. He announced late last night that he is rescheduling the rally in Oklahoma that was to be held on June 19th, which is Juneteenth. And that is the holiday commemorating the end of slavery in the United States. A number of people had said that it was just not a good move and that it was insensitive. And the president is criticized often for insensitivities on race issues and other issues. And you worked with the guy. You work closely with the guy. Give us a little sense of, you know, President Trump, what we may not know about him and his feelings.
Look, you know, all the stuff that is said, oh, he's so anti-woman. Well, I found him to be just the opposite. He gave an equal hearing to me or to anybody else. Most of the time he listened to what I had to say more than what some of the men had to say. And if you look at the record on the National Security Council, when I was there, the senior jobs, some of the top jobs were held by women. And today, a historic first, half of the professional staff on the National Security Council is women, and half of the senior leaders, half of the senior directorates. But have you heard anything about that? Donald Trump, his National Security Council promoting women? Oh, no, not a chance. Look, the media are never going to give President Trump credit for a darn thing. They're even more rabidly anti-Trump than the Democrats, the hardest that is to believe. But guess what? It's also terrific for their ratings. Their profits are up. The reporters, the anti-Trump reporters, are becoming famous talking heads, and they're giving lucrative speeches and writing books off of being anti-Trump. That's not going to change. I mean, they've got a profit motive as well as whatever other motives they might have. But the thing I've learned about President Trump is don't listen to what he says. Look at what he does. He's a businessman. For him, spin doesn't get the bottom line changed. A businessman, at the end of the day, either has made money or he's lost money. And when Trump, even when Trump was in the business of the television and entertainment, you either make money, you lose money at the end of the day. For businessmen, spin doesn't count. It's cold, hard facts. But in Washington, it's the opposite is true. For politicians, it's all spin. I mean, they say a million things that sound wonderful, but they rarely deliver on them. I mean, if they delivered on them, poverty would have been solved, 50, 70 years ago. So when I look at Trump, I say, wait a minute. He's done an awful lot for African Americans and underclass in general. Black unemployment's at historic lows. Female unemployment was at historic lows. Prison reform laws were passed. Trump rebuilt the economy once. And unlike other presidents who've rebuilt the economy, he did it for the underclass. It wasn't just the upper class. It's not just the 1%. Who reaped the benefits of it. If significantly and proportionately, it was the lower classes, and particularly Africans, American, and Hispanics women. So I think that he'll do it again. He'll figure out, as a businessman, how do you make it work again? And it'll be not blue smoke and mirrors. It won't be spin. It'll be cold, hard facts. And will he get a darn bit of credit? No. But the fact that he was willing to change that holiday, good for him. You know, he could have gone to that rally and said, I've been the best president for African Americans for low unemployment. After all, it was Lincoln who freed the slaves. He was a Republican. I'm a Republican. But I really credit President Trump for doing what he's decided to do, which is to not campaign there on Juneteenth and to have his rally the next day. But will he get any credit for it? Not a chance.
Nope. KT McFarland, and of course you can get a lot more insight into the Trump administration and into Trump the person in KT's book, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. Of course you can get it at Amazon and your favorite bookseller, and you can get the Kindle edition if you'd like to grab it right now. KT, thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's it for the Saturday morning update. Garden Sense follows the news next at 8 o'clock.
Hi. It's not much, but for such a small word, it can make a big difference. It can make a loved one smile, rekindle a friendship. And for Grandpa, well, it would probably make Grandpa's day. It won't change the world, but it can make someone's world a little brighter. You're at home and Cox is there with you. Stay home, stay safe, stay connected. Cox, bringing us closer.
WMAL-FM Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM WMAL, a Cumulus station.